This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we hear from Republican State Senate candidate Margaret O'Brien. She is running in the 20th State Senate District, which includes Kalamazoo County. But first, if you're trying to sort through what's true and what's not this election season, you might turn to the Truth Squad for help. Bridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, has been tracking what is said in TV advertising, direct mail, debates, and elsewhere, and then reporting its results through the Truth Squad. David Zeman is senior editor at Bridge. David, thank you for being with us.
It's great to be here, Gordon. Thank you.
Tell our audience, how do you decide what you're going to examine, what you're going to put under the microscope to see if it's true or not?
That's a great question. We try to focus mostly on statewide races, but we also look around for House and Senate races. And, sometimes, including a lot of the time this year, on U.S. races as well from Michigan. So the U.S. Senate race, some congressional races as well. Our meat and potatoes are the state of Michigan races, however, and there are enough interesting and contested statewide races that they've really kept our plate pretty full this election season.
And when it comes down to the individual statement that you decide to examine, is it something gets your attention? Is it sometimes that somebody might call your attention to it and say, hey, I heard Mark Schauer say, or I read that Rick Snyder said? Are those the means by which you might decide what's going to get fact-checked?
Absolutely. It's a combination of things. We try to subscribe to all the candidates' websites and Twitter and Facebook and so forth to sort of keep everything on our radar. But we also are not shy about asking people to send us an email or a text or whatever, alerting us to ads that might not be on our radar as well. And in terms of what we focus on, what we don't do, we're not pundits. We don't focus on how effective a message is, whether we would vote for one candidate or another. We're nonpartisan. So what we focus on is not the quality of the ads or the severity of the ads. We focus on whether the facts cited in the ad are accurate. So that's our role, and it's a very limited role, to make sure that when people are attacking other candidates, whether it's through their advertisements, third-party ads have been, incredibly numerous this year, as your listeners know, or their websites or, press releases and so forth. We're looking at all of that to see how square people are being in citing facts in their messages to voters.
So if someone has read your website, they will know that sometimes you call a foul, sometimes you call a flagrant foul, sometimes you issue a warning, sometimes you might say no foul. How do you determine which of those you're going to call?
We have definitions for what meets each level. And as we're finding out that sometimes our definitions are inadequate to the ingenuity of the people who create these ads. So, we do this as a group. We have someone who does primary research. We have experienced reporters as well as experienced political freelancers across the state. And we share the load and we reach consensus and we argue and debate just like an editorial team might do for a newspaper. And we try to come to a consensus as to what the call is.
Now, of course, Governor Snyder and Mark Schauer, his Democratic challenger, met for a town hall style debate this past Sunday. Your team examined what was said, and you actually, in what you've put on the website, have called one foul on Governor Snyder. Explain where he stepped over the line.
The foul we called on Governor Snyder, that was on the issue of fracking. He had made the comment. What we did was we had a couple reporters and myself, listening to the debate, and we're already pretty familiar with the candidates' major talking points, and we tried to evaluate those statements that raised factual questions. In Michigan, the governor said we do fracking right, 10,000 wells, and we never had a problem. This goes to an issue that's been very controversial throughout the state, particularly in the northern part of the state where a lot of this drilling is taking place. And the thing that we called a foul on was the governor's statement that we've never had a problem. What I think the governor meant to say is that there had never been any sort of major, spill or surface water contamination from any of these fracking operations. But his statement ended up being a little bit more definitive than that. And while there have not been any sort of major spills, there's still a lot of problems that are being addressed by state regulators, and that they're having to constantly update their regulations and look for new things. Their technical reports issued by the state show that there have been a lot of problems with monitoring what companies are doing. They've had trouble keeping track of how much water has been used up in different fracking operations and so forth. And so those are the things the state is working hard to correct. But to say that there have been no problems to date overstates things. So the Chief Squad cited a foul on that.
You did issue a couple of warnings to Mark Schauer, the Democratic challenger, and you also said that there is one to be determined. Now, what is still up in the air when it comes to whether or not a foul or a warning might be issued to Mr. Schauer?
Well, you know, he's been attacking the governor throughout the season on the pension taxes for seniors. That was part of that controversial first budget of the governor's, where he gave some tax breaks to businesses, the very controversial issue over education funding and so forth, and then taking away an exemption on pension taxes. So he's been hammering the governor on that, and then he sort of trotted out a fairly new line of his, calling them job-killing pension taxes. And I believe that. I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe that that's what his
yes,
that's what he said, job-killing pension tax. And they didn't give really any explanation or background. You see, when we look at these comments that the candidates or third parties make, we go to each of them and say, what's your support for that? Sometimes the support is cited directly in the ad. Usually it is not. So we say, when you say job killing, what's the evidence that this change in the pension taxes actually killed jobs? We speculated Sunday night, as we were putting this two squad together, that they may be referring to the fact that if retirees have less money in their pocket, they're not going to spend as much in the community, and therefore businesses in the community aren't going to be able to hire as many people as they otherwise would if there was more money in the pocket of retirees. But that was just our speculation, and we had not heard back and still have not heard back from Schauer's campaign about what their evidence is that this pension tax has killed jobs. So when we do hear back, we will give them a deadline, and presumably we will hear back, and then we will report more fully on it. That was one of the limitations of doing these two squads on deadline the night of the town hall, is that there wasn't as much time to reach out to the campaign. But we will come back on that as soon as we get an answer.
You recently issued a flagrant foul to the Michigan Republican Party for a flyer which was distributed in Portage for a state House race. Now, as you noted in your analysis, this was kind of typical boilerplate when it comes to the Affordable Care Act. But this was one of these that asked you to call the candidate, in this case, Democrat John Fisher, and express your disappointment with his support for the Affordable Care Act. The problem here is the phone number itself. What happened?
This was on a flyer that the Republicans were distributing in that House race, and you have it correct. And it says, tell him, meaning John Fisher, hardworking Michiganders are being hurt by Obamacare. And it asked to call this number. The problem is that the phone rings at the bedside of the nursing home where his 91-year-old mother is in hospice care. And her name is Isabella Cram, and she's been getting calls from people complaining about Obamacare and, you know, Fisher's in the same party and so forth. This has been, you know, very disorienting for her. She has congestive heart failure, heart arrhythmia, and confusion, and so forth. And so, you know, Fisher says he has no idea how the GOP got his mother's number. The Republican who Fisher is running against, Grant Iden, says he has had nothing to do with it. This came from the Republican Party, not from his campaign, and he is trying to separate himself from this ad. And what's really surprising is that the Republicans have not returned our calls to explain how this could happen, whether it was an accident, whether it was just, you know, someone put their number in there and thinking that it was the candidates and they didn't bother to call the number to see who answered. But either way, it is incredibly misleading, whether they did it on purpose, which you would like to think they did not, knowing that it went to this mother who's in hospice care, or whether it was a matter of just slapping in a number because it might have come under the candidate's name, but not checking to see who actually answered that number, which would seem to be like the minimum that they could have done to make sure that they were printing the right number. We gave that a flagrant foul.
So do you think that the Truth Squad and some of the other fact-checking organizations out there on the national level, et cetera, do you think that it is doing anything to keep the candidates honest? Or does the fact that we keep seeing these ads tell us that the candidates and the other groups that would put these ads out don't fear their comments being called into question or being flagged for a foul by the Truth Squad or anything else?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not sure that I have a definitive answer. I know that the campaigns themselves are on a hair trigger waiting for our Truth Squads, and I'm sure, you know, similar efforts by other media publications as well. I know that in this whole debate that I'm sure your listeners are familiar with in the governor's race about whether Snyder cut $1 billion from education funding or added $1 billion to education funding, the Snyder camp has really seized on a Detroit Free Press article that had called Shower's allegations that he cut $1 billion a lie. So they are using this, and they are calling us, and not just those campaigns, but every campaign, they're calling us, you know, very strongly to lodge complaints when they think something got a foul that didn't deserve one, or vice versa, and to make us aware of, you know, ads put out by their opponents. So the campaigns are very conscious of it, and it's not just True Squad, it's PolitiFact and some of these other national ones that you reference. You know, we think that we're having an impact, and you know, if it didn't matter, the campaigns wouldn't care what we were printing. So we get a lot of exposure for it. It runs in MLive, it runs in other publications. So, you know, we're trying to do what we can to keep them honest.
So we've got under 3 weeks to go before the general election. How tough is it going to be to keep up with the flurry of things which may come out between now and Election Day? Because we often see a flood of ads right before the general election. How hard do you try to keep up with everything that may get thrown out there and try to put it through some sort of a fact check and to let viewers know if it is in fact the truth?
It's really impossible. I mean, we're, you know, we have five or six different people who are working on this, and we can't critique every ad that comes out. We get short shrift to a lot of important races, congressional races, House races, state Senate races. We try to focus on a lot of the ads that mean a lot to people throughout the state, the governor, the attorney general, the U.S. Senate race. But we can't get them all. We can't get all the local races that we want to. We're not giving a lot of attention to Supreme Court races, which are incredibly important. The one that we did hit on shows how, I guess it really plays on or how little people really know about what the Supreme Court justices do. We came down pretty hard on the Supreme Court ad put out by two incumbent justices that talk about they're free of special interests and they decide cases on the merit, but then go on to say that their highest priority is putting away sexual predators, and they don't talk at all about what they're, you know, what their first duty is, which is to make sure that the government follow the rules in finding these people guilty and making sure that these people really are guilty. So we don't do enough. It's frustrating. We wish we could look at every race and give our readers a great consumer's guide to every commercial that hits them. But in our True Squads, we try to give readers and listeners the tools for being better consumers of political information. And we do that as best we can, and we can't hit them all.
David Zeman, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
David Zeman is a senior editor at Bridge. You can find links to the Truth Squad at bridgemi.com and also through our website, wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. What is considered one of the most competitive races for state senate in Michigan this year is happening in Kalamazoo County. State Representative Margaret O'Brien currently represents the city of Portage and surrounding townships in the 61st State House District. She is the Republican nominee in the 20th State Senate District. Margaret O'Brien, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tell our listeners once again briefly what you would like to do if you were to get 4 years in the state senate.
When I first ran for the state house in 2010, I was really concerned about the direction of our state. We had difficulties balancing budgets. There was rising debt in our state and a lack of optimism. And over the last 3.5 years, I focus on making sure that we pass balanced budgets that have no gimmicks and that take in consideration the future. That second, we have reduced our long-term debt, which we have successfully done by nearly $20 billion. And then third, that we put into place policies that show people we do have a hope for our future. And I want to take these same principles to the Senate, because if we're honest, the job is far from done. While Michigan has drastically reduced its unemployment rate, we know we still have more to do. And despite the fact that there's been job creation of nearly 300,000 jobs, we lost over 800,000 jobs during the last decade. Again, we have more to do. And so I want to take these same principles to the Senate to make sure that we don't miss a beat and that we keep focusing on the future of our state. Because right now, as it stands, if we continue on the same path, Michigan will pay off its debt in 2038. So there's still a lot to do, and I don't want my kids and grandkids to be saddled with the poor decisions of people during the last decade. So I want to make sure that we continue to practice fiscal responsibility.
Specifically on jobs, what else does Michigan need to do? As you noted, there has been job growth, but the state is still catching up. So what else remains on the table there as you see it?
We need to stop looking at Michigan's budget as how is money spent, but rather how is money invested? What is the return we're getting? So on roads, we all know we need better roads in this town and throughout the state. And in fact, some areas are hit so hard that they're low traveled roads. They don't even have the money to return them to gravel. And so we need to continue to have a focus on roads. Now, over the last 3.5 years, we have put in over $870 million from the general fund into roads. That's a stark difference between the administration before I was in office, of which no dollars were put into the general fund. So we have to continue our focus on roads. Now, the House passed a bipartisan plan to have a first step made towards a long-term solution, but it's sitting in the Senate. So we're still working on what can get both votes in the House and in the Senate. Now, in the Senate, I think on the roads package, there's been some partisan issues that have arisen, and that I can bring my bipartisan leadership to the issue and how we talk about issues and take the politics out of it. But second, after roads, we need to talk about education. We know that birth rates have declined in Michigan, and during the last decade, we lost over 150,000 kids out of our state who left because their parents didn't have jobs anymore. And so we need to look at how we invest in education. Schools have two types of costs, fixed and variable. And the fixed costs don't change when kids leave the school system or when kids enter. And so we need to change our thinking about how we invest in education. And then finally, auto insurance continues to be a big issue. And I get numerous questions at the door and emails asking me, what are we going to do about auto insurance? And having served on the insurance committee the last 4 years, I definitely have ideas on what we can do to lower auto insurance for Michigan families.
Okay, we'll try to get to all that before we're done. Let's start with schools, because this has been a big bone of contention in terms of how much money is actually being invested in schools and where it's ending up. Of course, you know, there's the chart that you've pointed to many times that shows an increase in education dollars. But if we had a superintendent here right now, such as Michael Rice, he would say a lot of that's not getting into the classroom. So when you talk about investment, how do you balance those things in terms of, for instance, money in the classroom and then, of course, the money to cover teacher pensions?
Historically, education has been the single most political topic in our state. And the first thing we have to do is take the politics out. And so when you take the politics out, it means what is the goal that we all want? And how do we work towards it in partnership? Right now, education is about being a political football. And being the mom of two kids, my kids are not political football. So I have not been happy with how education has been discussed in the past. Now, the last 3.5 years, I have worked in partnership with both Republicans and Democrats to address the education issue. First thing we had to realize is that with Proposal A that was passed, it moved all the retirement obligations to the school districts. The state no longer had the obligation to pay retirement. And so a portion of their per pupil allotment that they get from the state, they give back to the retirement system. So the first thing that the state has done, we've invested, I think the most recent number was nearly $900 million extra into the teacher retirement system. And people say, well, Margaret, that money doesn't go in the classroom. That $900 million the state put into the retirement account on behalf of the schools, so they didn't have to pay the $900 million. So the schools saw a benefit there by not having to pay that portion of the obligation. They still had to pay costs towards retirement, but the state covered them that $900 million. And second, it's buying down the long-term liabilities that is in that system. So we definitely have a plan to reduce what portion of their per pupil they're spending on retirement benefits. The second thing we have to look at is, again, we have fixed and variable costs. And we know that as a student leaves a district, the school does not see their costs go down by that amount. So we have to start talking about how schools are funded. What's the smart investment? I think the state should be relooking at this issue, and I am willing to lead on this issue about how should we fund schools.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with State Representative Margaret O'Brien. She is the Republican nominee for State Senate in the 20th District, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. Let's tackle roads. Obviously, this has been an issue which has been ongoing for a few years, actually. Just to get your one vote, should it be later this year in the State House or perhaps next year if you're elected to the State Senate, what's the combination of things you want to see for a long-term sustainable funding model for road maintenance and repair?
You mentioned it in your question, sustainable. Simply increasing the gas tax is not a long-term solution. Now, the legislature, we did index the gas tax to the construction CPI so that we could allow for increasing construction costs, which we know happens. But having a system that solely relies on the gas tax is not a long-term solution. I would like for us to really discuss and possibly even put before the voters something totally different that would be more sustainable. I've talked about maybe we should eliminate the gas tax completely, eliminate it constitutionally, and ask the voters, would you like to see a 7% sales tax instead and have that 1%, that 1 cent go towards roads? That would be something that would allow all users to participate. Right now, what we have is the roads are primarily funded by gasoline-powered vehicles. So here on Western's campus, we've got electric plug-in stations. If those vehicles don't need that much gas, they're not paying for the roads, despite the fact their car weighs just as much as a gasoline-powered car. And so we've got certain users who are using the roads that aren't paying. So maybe if we can find a different way that can include all users of the roads, and all of us use the roads, whether we walk, we ride a bike, we drive a car, everybody relies on the roads. Everybody gets food from somewhere. Everybody buys something from somewhere. Roads are key, so we got to make sure all users are paying in.
I want to get to taxes here for a moment. Obviously, the tax on pension income has become a big issue in this political season. You have said that it did change the system and make it more fair. In other words, that people who were working were being taxed on their money as opposed to someone who might have retired early wasn't if they had a pension. But I guess I'm wondering about what about the other issue of fairness, which is changing the system on people who had planned on retiring and that pension income not being taxed?
For people, when the change was made, if they were 67 or older, they saw no change at all. And the question comes down to, should your job dictate your tax rate? Because that's the old way. The old way is, if you have a government pension, you'll never pay tax. And interestingly enough, you have a government pension, you typically can retire earlier than somebody in the private sector or somebody without a pension. So a government pension, no tax. If you had a private pension, you had a certain exemption, then you paid tax. If you had a 401k, we know that you can't do an early withdrawal of 401k or there's a penalty. But if you got to that age, The state law did not provide for an exemption, although there are some who may have taken an exemption, figuring it was similar to a private pension. But they had no exemption, so they had to pay full tax. Anybody who did not have a 401k or a pension available to them, maybe they invested in stocks. They had to pay the full tax. And if you were 70 years old and you were still working, you had to pay full tax. So I don't think the system was fair in that your job dictated what your tax rate is. So we tried to allow for those who were substantially into their retirement, made sure there was no change for them, but we instituted an exemption for everybody. So previously, there were groups of people who had no exemption that now have one. So 20,000 individual, 40,000 married, and you now have an exemption. That first 20,000 or 40,000 of income is tax-free. And I appreciate you asking because I've had a number of people ask me about it and they go, Margaret, I'm paying tax now. And then when we talked through it, they realized they didn't have a pension and it was just all the rhetoric that's being spread. They thought they were paying something that they weren't. And some of the people realize they now don't have to pay a tax that they were paying previously.
A lot of reporting has been done on what's happened with Aramark and the prison food system. Looking forward, when there is a proposal, as I'm sure there will be in the future, and if you're in the legislature, to privatize some sort of state service, would you have a different set of criteria or would there be different things that you would look for to ensure that this is being done properly?
Yes. When I look at the Aramark proposal, privatization, by and large, is not bad. But is privatization always the best option? Not in every case. So what I would look for, if it came before the legislature, is ensuring that we put in criteria of what makes a qualified bidder. When I was on the Portage City Council, where the city council actually got to pick who was our servicer, the person who was going to do whatever project, whereas in state government, things are so big, the legislature often is not included at all. We might vote on an overarching policy, but somebody else is picking the bidder who wins. I would say let's have lowest qualified bidder and let's spell out what qualified means, because this is an issue when you have somebody that hasn't been doing the job. They apparently missed their mark. Apparently the state will still receive the savings despite Aramark's going to have to pay people more, but it's going to come out of their pocket, not our pocket. But it has been unnecessary of an issue for the state. We shouldn't have had this issue. But we also need to look at, when you look at the maggots in the food, that came from the food source provider, not from Aramark. We need to look at everything through the whole complete chain to make sure that we've got qualified people delivering the product, regardless if it's the private sector or it's a government worker. We need to hold everybody accountable to certain minimum standards.
You have said that you are open to amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity. Can you give a framework of the conditions under which that would get your yes vote?
What I'm looking for is making sure that we're respecting all people. And obviously, anybody who is an employee, they should really have their work judged by their individual merit, the talents, the skills they bring to the workplace. So what I'm looking for is just a level playing field for all employees. I want to make sure that we have an environment where everyone's respected, but we often will throw out those people who have deeply held religious beliefs. And so we need to make sure that we're respecting everybody. Now, as far as when a bill is going to come in front of us, I'm not sure when a bill will come in front of us. I anticipate one would. I need to see it as it's gone through the process. I've been very focused on education issues, and there's been another team that's been working on this issue. I want to see what they've come up with. I'm optimistic we can find something that can gain everybody's support, but a lot of it's going to be waiting to see what the bill is going to look like.
Margaret O'Brien, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien is currently a state representative. She represents Portage and surrounding townships in the 61st State House District. She's the Republican nominee for state Senate in the 20th District, which includes Kalamazoo County. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.